It's been a little more than a year since Burlington welcomed its newest police chief, and while Brandon Del Pozo would hardly be fazed by taking over as head cop in Vermont's largest city, having come to the job from the Big Apple, New York, after all, there have been challenges at his new post, and we are visiting with Brandon Del Pozo today at the Burlington Police Headquarters to take stock of what he's seen and learned on the job over the past year. Chief Del Pozo, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
In the intro, I spoke about challenges at the new job. One of these was evident back in March when, after a five-hour standoff with Burlington police, a man known as Phil Grennan, with a history of mental illness, was shot and killed. And the shooting resurfaced some tensions, notably around how police respond to individuals who have mental illness or might be in the midst of a mental health crisis. The officer in the shooting was cleared of any wrongdoing. The man was wielding a knife at the time. But going forward, have you made any changes to the protocol that officers follow in these kinds of situations?
Yeah, one thing to understand and to stress is that police officers don't come to work wanting to take a life. These are events that are, tragic for the families, for the person involved, and for the police as well. You know, one of the things I found is that here in Vermont, police departments, I think, really strive towards using the minimum amount of force, but where we needed to make innovations was in even the tactics and techniques, the equipment and the training that really de-escalates and brings about less lethal encounters. I mean, right now, as we're recording this, up the avenue, on North Avenue, we're engaged in de-escalation training, and it's coming right out of the Police Executive Research Forum.
What about things like a study that found that there is a disproportionate number of people of color that are stopped for traffic violations than white people? Is this something that your department is addressing, looking at, and having to deal with?
Yeah, so as many listeners undoubtedly know, Vermont is a state where it's a matter of law that police agencies have to collect car stop race data, including outcomes, and provide it for analysis. And not only do we comply with that, but we go two steps further. One is putting that information online. We have a transparency portal. It's easy to find on the internet. And we have an analyst so that internally we have the power to say it's not just outsiders analyzing our data, we're doing it ourselves. And we do find, however, that if you're here in Burlington, our own analysis finds that if you're a black male between the ages of 18 and 26, the chances of you getting searched by a police officer while driving are much higher than if you're a white driver, and we're less likely to find contraband. And that's, I have to, listen, that's a fact. We're examining that right now. I want to reduce that outcome. I'm not comfortable with it, but part of it is being candid with the public about that fact.
Word on the street is, and I think you've confirmed this in some of your answers here already, is that you're really a data guy. You're interested in data, and what are some of the ways you've used data and information to implement some new policies? How do you see using data in the future to guide policing in Burlington?
Yeah, I think that one of the ways that data can be really helpful is, frankly, in the opiate crisis. Right now, our principal measures, the ones that keep on coming up in the county and to some extent in the state, are the number of people who die from overdoses and the length of the waiting list here in Chittenden County. The waiting list to me is like unemployment. Some people stop looking for work. Some people stop looking for treatment. For us to really get a handle on where to go with opiates and how to allocate our resources and how to take our scarcity and get the best effect out of it, we need to have measures that go well beyond the two I've just described. And they exist in pockets in the police department, DCF, probation and parole, corrections, the Howard Center, UVM Medical Center. We all have bits and pieces of a puzzle that if we put together with data and come together, we can really respond in a way that delivers value given the scarcity of resources that we have. I think that's one of the big ways forward. And just in a completely opposite sort of trivial sense, we did, I think, a very good job of moving a lot of the public intoxication and urination and disorder from, for example, Cherry Street, also North Street. And I was happy to look at the data and show that we did that while issuing fewer tickets at those locations.
I want to bring this back for a moment to the opiate crisis and take kind of a chance in asking you this question here, because I'm not really sure how to ask it. This problem is so crippling and devastating. I mean, there are people dying, as you've said. There is fentanyl out there along with heroin. There's all these kinds of problems. I want to get a sense, if you don't mind answering, how you, the officers in this department, talk amongst yourselves about this. There must be times when you ask or talk about it in the sense of, why is this happening? And I'm sure you have opinions on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's officers that have been policing Burlington and living in Vermont for decades, much, much longer than me. And when I talk to them about it, one of the things that comes up is that the people who may have been alcoholics in years past or may have been listless or committing petty crimes are now the people who are the most vulnerable to heroin addiction. Now, that's, you know, to be clear, listen, there are folks up on the Hill in the wealthiest parts of the city and in our universities who are doing it, but the coping mechanisms they have in place and the recourses they have are really strong. Doesn't mean that they can all get unhooked, but, you know, if you're from an upper middle class family and you're addicted to heroin, they'll get you to treatment. The waiting list doesn't apply to you, even if they have to send you out of state. But there are these folks in our working class neighborhoods, folks without those resources, who are probably underemployed. Like I said, a few decades ago or even more recently, they'd be hitting the bottle. And now heroin is that alternative. And, you know, the mayor and I are working on 10 principles for our response to opiates, like guiding principles. You know, one of the principles, and I'm probably not articulating it perfectly, but it's that the addiction that occurs, the initial choice to use opiates is just that. It's a choice, and Vermonters make these choices for a reason. And keeping them off of it is Vermonters choosing not to use opiates. So I guess what I'm saying is that the things that lead to the initial use, the first injection, the first snort, the first pill, those social factors are not much different than what has led folks to hit the bottle, to use other drugs, to voice discontent with, you know, what opportunities the state's afforded them. And I think that you know, fixing an economy and fixing a culture and fixing a social network is what's going to lead us out of this part and parcel with the treatment.
Certainly there are those economic factors. I wonder if there are some people that hear that answer and might say, you're talking about someone that maybe would have been an alcoholic, now they're taking heroin. That's a disease that person has. Mm-hmm. It's not so much a choice, because you're talking about personal responsibility with that choice. And I assume that you are.
I don't mean to say it's a choice and you chose to use it. What I mean to say is that if your Vermont is a ski pass that you can't afford and a job you can't get and a house that's a fortune to heat in the winter and a lot of underemployment and boredom, then using heroin to medicate sounds maybe like a great option. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. And it's not just, hey, buck up and don't use it. It's what kind of social networks and economy and society are we creating where the use of heroin becomes attractive, right? And the folks that are you know, sort of, you know, wealthy and have more choices, they could get swept up in this, and they are. There's a lot of heroin use going on in very wealthy enclaves. But that's not what results in human trafficking necessarily. That's not what results in retail theft. Those folks aren't robbing pharmacies. They're not out there, you know, committing crimes and breaking into cars. So when you look at really what's weighing Vermont down, it's the struggle of working class people for whom the drug becomes an attractive choice based on their circumstances, and then who struggle with keeping up the addiction. I mean, that's where the work has to be done to rehabilitate the state.
Finally, Chief Del Pozo, a year from now, where would you like the Burlington Police Department to be?
So a year from now, I'd like the Burlington Police Department to be, number one, a more diverse police force that meets or exceeds the diversity of the city. It's not that's a low bar, right? Because this is not a very diverse place. I'd also like us to be well on the road of being one of the most innovative forces when it comes to the use of data in making deployment and policing decisions. You'll also see that we're going to make a real effort to have our policing in general vetted by professionals to get the best public health outcomes, because opiates are a public health crisis. They're not a law enforcement crisis. That's just one component. And I really want us to be a regional leader in how we de-escalate, not just through talk, which is extremely important, and verbal tactics, but also how we have the right inventory of equipment and physical techniques to subdue people and get them to help without using lethal force. You're going to see us continuing to strive for all those things in the next year.
Burlington Police Chief Brandon Del Pozo, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Mitch. It's great.